The Bible is falling.
Well, hello again, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Bible is Funny podcast, a very special episode. I'm so glad that you are joining me today in whatever you're doing. And I'm going to ask for this because I like to ask for this every couple of episodes. Tell me what you're doing while you're listening to the podcast. I love these stories. Are you cleaning? Are you jogging? What are you doing? Are you on your commute? I want to know when, how, and where you're listening to the podcast because it fascinates me. So reach out. Welcome to the Bible is Funny podcast. My name is Anthony Russo. I am coming to you as usual from my house. Here on the Bible is Funny podcast, we talk about the funniest parts of the Bible and what we can learn from them. And I am not alone on this episode. Well, we're never alone. I hope that's a message for somebody out there right now. We're struggling. You're never alone. But today, I'm not alone on the podcast because I am joined by a very special guest I can't wait to introduce you to. His name is Charles Ryan Kendrick.
That's me.
Ryan.
That's me.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I was just wondering when I would be. You know, I saw that the Bible is Funny had begun a podcast, and I told my agent, I was like, just be on the lookout. I'm going to get an invite on this podcast. I don't know when, but I'm sure it's going to come.
Can I want to brag about you for a minute. You reached out early, though, for real. You made it, or maybe it was a joke and you don't even remember it, but it was on Instagram. You were like, oh, when do I get to be on the podcast?
Oh, no, I'm sure I did because I was like talking to you. So I was like, yeah.
I was like, man, I'd love to have Ryan on the podcast. So we're having, but your name is Charles Ryan and I want to start there.
Okay.
When your first name is not your first name, when do you realize you're a Charles? Did you knew you were a Charles the whole time?
From like probably kindergarten, the first time anybody ever takes roll and you have to tell a teacher that you actually are not that name, like your parents kind of prep you in that, you know, like, hey, listen, right, we did a thing and we named you inconveniently, so sorry. But here's where it is. So my dad is Charles Richard, has never gone by Charles in his life, goes by CR, goes by Richard. He's gone by Dick.
I've seen him like, as CR.
Yeah. Never gone by Charles. So I asked him, we're talking like before, like we were getting ready to have our daughter Elizabeth and like we were talking about names and stuff. And I was like, why did you name me Charles Ryan and make me go by middle name? Does it ever bother you? He's like, oh, it's bothering me my whole life that I always had to go by a middle name. I was like, well, why did you put that on me? Why did you? And he didn't make me a junior. I'm not Charles Richard Kendrick Jr. He just, like, we just have the same initials. That's all he did.
Right. CRK. I'm always so curious about that moment. Yeah, because that's when it would come up, would be like kindergarten. And then, like, this, oh, by the way, Ryan's actually not your name. Okay, we'll see you later.
Yeah. Hey, when the teacher asks if Charles is here, she's talking about you. But it's not. And we'll talk about it later in the car. Bye. Love you. Have fun. Don't cry.
Like the foundations of your world are already shaking. You're now going to, from now till the rest of your life, you're going to spend most of your day not at home.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, your name is not your name.
Yeah.
I think I've talked about this on here before. I got no prep from my parents on the name Anthony and how it is just, Anthony is a canvas for people. No one feels like they have to call me Anthony. It's like, oh, that's a suggestion. So, like, I distinctly remember the first time somebody, like, casually referred to me as Tony. And I remember thinking, like, well, that's not my that's not my name. Like Ant was kind of what my family took. And that was like, yeah, that's shorter. But the first time somebody hit me with a Tony, I was like, that's me? I'm also Tony? Is that what I have to respond to now?
In college, there was a kid on my wing in my dorm who his name was Augustus, which is a strong name, right? You know, that's crazy.
That.
Like, that's a big name, right?
Yeah.
I went to school. We called him Augie. And I went to school with Augie for like, I mean, I don't know. We were on the same wing. We were on the same wing 1 year. And then the next year, like, we were like, there were two. There was two wings upstairs. So he was like on the other one. So we were like on the same floor at least for 2 years. In the second year, I learned his name is not Augustus. He came to school, and when they were like, Robert, he was like, oh, I go by Augustus. It's not even like it was his middle name. He just decided on the first day, like, oh, yeah, no, I prefer Augustus.
I'm going to be Augustus.
And nobody knew. He didn't tell it. It was a long play. Like, he ran the gambit. Like, it was incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he really did. Yeah.
Crosby has a friend, Augie. And I feel like Augustus to Augie, I don't know that there's a bigger gap there between you're either like a Caesar.
Right.
Or you are, you know.
A frat brother.
You're one of the other.
Yeah.
Charlie or Charles is like, those are kind of Augustus and Augie.
Yeah.
Also, I guess you'd have the Willy Wonka, Augustus. Anyway, Ryan, we have so much to get to. So let's, your name is Charles Ryan. We've covered
that. I go by Augustus, though. You can call me Augustus.
Covered that much so far. I want to bring everybody in because they've met the podcast audience. Podcast family out there, the listeners, they've met Tim. They know Tim Wyckoff. He's been on a couple of times. But what you guys may not know, I think we've mentioned Ryan a couple of times in those conversations. But Ryan, Tim, and I traveled the country doing improv for like 3 summers. We were busiest in the summer.
Because you were still in high school. So Tim and I were not in school because we were old men. And we were like, we're going to steal this high school kid. Make sure you take driver's ed or something. And,
took me away from, I missed a couple rehearsals for High School Musical, due to one of the tours.
Yeah.
Driver's ed, never. But yeah, we traveled around and I was just talking to Rachel before I started talking to you. Like, I don't know how you think back on that time, but I just have like the best kind of nostalgia for those times. Yeah. Like, it was just so fun that we got to do that together.
Oh my gosh. It was like, it's insane. Like, when you look back on it, especially there's two sides of it, I'm sure, like, for you. One, like, you were in high school at this point. So when it was like, when you went back, I think, wasn't that right? Like, the first summer that we took you out was like going into your senior year of high school, right?
I think it was going into my junior year of high school.
Okay. So yeah, like, when you go back to school for you, it's like, what'd you do this summer? Oh, well, I did. But then the other thing that's crazy is like, Tim and I were in our early 20s, like, all of our other friends that we had were like working other jobs. Like, they were either working in the beginning stages of their career as an accountant, or they were like, they had decided to go get their master's degree. And Tim and I were like, we're going to pile into a car and drive to California and just do a string of summer camps and make enough money to, you know, like, pay rent. And that'll be it.
Yeah. That was it.
Like, that was crazy that we did that for that long. I love it. It's one of the most fun things ever.
Do you have any like memories that jump out? Anything specifically? I'm going to ask, because Tim and Ryan traveled a lot without me. A lot of times when I would get involved is if it was like an extended residency at some sort of place. So like they would do like a summer camp for several days. We were doing improv comedy. It just, when there was 3 people, it opened up. There was more to do. So if you can think of a memory that involved me, I would appreciate it. But if you have another memory, of traveling with Isaac that sticks out,
here's a good one that I hope you remember. We used to do a game called, Good, Bad, Worst, where like the audience would ask for, advice. And so like, we would always, the joke was that like one of us would give good advice and someone would give like bad advice. It was kind of funny. And then someone would give like the worst advice, just like ludicrous, terrible advice.
Right.
Somebody thought it'd be really funny to ask a question. How do you eat a pomegranate? And Anthony didn't know what a pomegranate was. Also, he thought it was a pomegranate. And Anthony was supposed to be giving like the worst advice, I think. I mean, I think he was supposed to be giving just like the absolute terrible advice. And you looked at me on stage like, I have no idea. I don't know what's about. But you can't, like, we can't take a break. Like, and I didn't want the joke to be embarrassing you in front of all. I didn't want it to be like, oh, look at this. Anthony knows what this is.
Right.
Because I wanted it to actually be a funny event. But afterwards, we were all laughing because I honestly don't remember what you said other than like it literally made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because you had no idea what that fruit was. or why someone would ask about eating something because you didn't even know it was a food.
Right.
And afterwards, we were debriefing this, and I remember Tim and I going, "Do you know what that is?" And you're like, "I have no, I don't know.
No.
What is that? What is that thing? What is that
no.
thing?" I do know. Remember you and I at one point. Oh, it was because Tim had gotten married, and so like he was too responsible to be able to go away for like 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
So one time, Anthony and I drove from Nashville to Gertie, Oklahoma.
That is right.
It was solid. And I got the flu, I'm pretty sure.
Violently ill. You got violently ill.
It was like, we got there and I was like, dude, I don't feel great on this drive. We got there and by like the end of the day one, it was like, my temperature is like 102. I can't get out of bed. I'm crawling onto the stage, doing 30 minutes of improv, going back and falling asleep.
Oh, you were such a champ for doing that.
And Anthony, meantime, was just like, I'm going to go play basketball with all the high school kids. See you later. Which is fine, which is what you should do. But it was just like,
dude,
I was asleep until I had to be on stage and then like back asleep. And Anthony, I'm pretty sure you won basketball tournaments at that point, you know, that sort of thing.
In your honor. I made armbands that said Charles Strong.
That was when you got the tattoo of me on your, I remember that.
Augustus Strong.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. That's so funny. I remember that very well now. And I just remember every time coming back into the room. And first of all, the fact that I just stayed in that room with you, I was like, I won't catch anything. I'm young.
You didn't, though. Like, I don't remember you getting sick.
I didn't get sick. But it was always dark. And it was always like, Ryan, I'm just going to grab my deodorant. I'll be out of your hair. And I also remember we brought, because as much as I'm sure youth pastors will appreciate this, we always wanted to be like around, but we also, it's for the kids. So there's events we were not a part of, like basketball and things. And we brought some sort of video game system. And I want to say I remember playing like Mario Soccer or something.
Yes, that's right.
Because
I wasn't sick the whole week. I remember it was just like a couple days. And so by the end, I was like, I wasn't great, but I was like better enough. And we like, it was back when the Wii was a big deal. And Tim and I had discovered some sort of Mario Soccer game and got super addicted to it.
Oh, it was so
fun. And then we looped you into it. And that was all we did.
Yeah.
Like, dominated it.
Yeah.
Dominated
it. Oh, well, obviously. That goes without saying. So fun. And it's like the other things that came to mind when I was thinking about this are like, they're so hard to explain because you have moments that are just very funny to you because you're just driving through Texas for 7 straight weeks.
Yeah.
But we got to a point where like, I think there's a series of like casinos called Harrah's. Harrah's. I think it's actually called Harrah's. Just like, you want to know, people are like, oh, touring seems so fun. You know what it is? It's eventually you think, pronouncing Harrah's Harrah's is the funniest thing that's ever happened, and every time you see it, you say it.
Yep. Without.
That's what it's like. And then you fall asleep and you wake up and you're in Texas over and over and over again.
Over forever.
I got to talk to Tim about this, and I don't want to spend too much time here because we do have some fun stuff to talk about. But I always look back and think like I just got to travel with like my two older brothers, and we got to go do this really fun thing, and even more so recently, when Tim was in town over Christmas, I talked to him about this, and I'll tell you this now. I have come to appreciate so much those first opportunities that like I was in front of people, especially people I didn't know, and they were like laughing, and they were like, like it was a thing. And I was surrounded by two really healthy people that were like teaching me that like, this is a cool thing, but like, you don't, this isn't it. Like, you can't get lost in this because if you start needing them to do that, you'll get to a really unhealthy place. And this has really been coming up for me a lot in this season because you see performers specifically that are like itching to be in, like they're like, hey, you can't be in front of people. And they're like, I have to be in front of people.
Right.
Like, where does validation come from? And it's really brought me back to that tour a lot. And I said to Tim, and I will say to you now, I'm very thankful for you guys for that at that young point in what my career would end up being. That I had people that were like, hey, this is cool and this is fun and you should do this, and like affirming abilities and things, but then also saying, like walking me through it the best way, saying like, don't get drunk on this. Like,
right.
There are other things you guys always wanted me to get drunk on, but the that's a joke, Mom. That's a joke, Mom.
Sorry, Sue. I'm sorry. It's not.
Mom was very specific.
Have you ever told the story my very first job ever was at the place that your mom worked
No, I have not.
That was how I knew Sue Brewer. I worked at Munce Marketing when I was 15.
That's right.
And I put together cardboard boxes like every day so they could ship out CDs. That was literally my entire job.
To this day, she talks about how you're the better at that than anybody that's ever done it.
I hope so. I wanted to leave a lasting legacy.
I want to leave a legacy. So I appreciate you, Ryan. You're the best. Thanks for being on the podcast now. Thanks for taking me touring all those years ago. The last little story, though, that did just remind me of was, and this is true, and I don't think I've said this on the podcast yet, you both or just Tim had to like ask my parents, had to have like a sit down with my parents, didn't you?
We both had to go meet them. I feel like it was way more awkward for Tim because he was dating Mallory, who was friends with Rachel, who you were dating. And so it was also this like, I got to figure, like, Tim had to navigate the waters of like, I'm dating this girl who knows Anthony and knows his parents and best friends with the girl that he's dating. And I was just like, hey, Sue, I worked at Munce Marketing with you. He was like, oh, hi, Ryan. Like
the box guy.
Yeah. But yes, that's awesome. What was funny was because Isaac Improv has a history of doing that, you know, like of taking younger guys along to learn and to do that. And so Chip Conrad, who started Isaac Improv back with Barrick and Kyle, came to my parents' house when I was like 17.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Kind of talked to my parents about like, because he was going to have me and Tim and I think like Dylan, our other friend from high school, go and like do a show that they couldn't make over in like Orlando or something. And so he kind of was like, here's what we do. Here's how much they get paid and whatever. So yeah, it's like a full circle moment.
So fun. So fun. Okay. Last question before we get into the other stuff. Maybe a couple more. You also were doing, you did so many things. So our church that we all kind of grew up in was so interesting. We had like your normal student ministry at the time where you had like middle school, high school, but then we had this like really one of a kind college ministry for a time. But it was like, when I tell people this story, it's like so bizarre because it's so normal to me that it was like teaching comedy. And there was like all kinds of comedy going on in our college ministry. That was like, it had its own building. It was like, it was a bar that they bought and converted. So you're doing comedy there with Tim and doing improv. But then you guys also started doing American Public and you started doing sketch comedy. And so I wanted to know what your favorite, I'm going to hype this. I'm going to overhype it. It was the best sketch comedy I've seen live. Like it was, those were some of my favorite.
That's not overhyped.
It was literally so good.
The best thing that's ever been put on a stage.
So what was your favorite sketch that you did with American Public or video that you made?
I was not on stage that much with American Public because I did improv and I was also teaching at the Bible study and I just didn't want to be on stage that much, but I did help Tim make videos. Also, I just didn't want the time commitment. I was like, I don't want to do all this. Like, I did love making videos with them. So I would make Tim and I would usually be the ones to like either come up with the ideas or at least just like edit them and whatever. Cause that's what I learned a lot of in college. And for me is the funniest thing ever because of the absolute absurdity of it. But the best part was that it played to very little laughter, which is exactly what I figured would happen. So, we made a video that was a shot for shot recreation of the bus scene from Almost Famous when he gets back on the bus after jumping into the pool and they all sing Tiny Dancer. We one night, Tim and we weren't watching Almost Famous. Like we were just like sitting again. This was our job at the time, like for whatever that worked out in life.
Right.
And we were like sitting in my driveway one night, talking about stuff we could do, and somehow that song came up and we talked about that scene in Almost Famous and had the idea of like, what if we figured out a way to recreate, like what if we gave some sort of really lame storyline that ended up with all these people sitting in chairs in rows in the same staggered way and somebody being sad and then everybody singing Tiny Dancer to them. And sure enough, we recreated, I mean, we're talking shot for shot.
It was so good.
Like you had to edit the song because it's not like the song is a lot longer before you get to the chorus, but in the movie, they've edited the verse down. So we had to do all of that. and it played to almost crickets. And it's exactly what I thought would happen. And I still think it's one of the most funny things ever because of how entirely absurd the premise is. So yeah, that's my favorite thing, just because it was like, what, when else in life can you make this? And, you know,
well, and it was also, I remember the video so well, and it was, I will say one thing in defense of the audience, which I was in at the time, it was a very like mesmerizing thing. It was not necessarily like a laugh out loud thing. It was like, oh, I'm watching this. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
But it also really, to me, this is what that video did forever for me. And I'm telling you, I remember it this well, is it isolated the moment where he went the fingers in his face and said, "You are home."
Yeah.
And it's like, in the context of that whole movie, they got away with it. But when you pulled it out and you just were like, that's a very absurd thing to do to somebody.
The best part was that, like, because in the movie, it's like, it's the guy and the girl, it's Penny, you know, and like, and the boy. And he's like, "I have to go home to my parents. Or I have to go home." And she's like, "You are home." But in the video, it's our friends Jason and Jake, who are roommates at the time. Right. And he's like, "I have to go home." Like, "You are home." Like, it's just such home.
Perfect.
And right now, people listening to this podcast who have not seen Almost Famous are going, "I don't know what they're talking about." And even people who have seen Almost Famous are like, "What? Yeah. I don't remember that scene."
Yeah. Right. But which is great because the reaction of us retelling it on the podcast matches perfectly in the room when it was shown live for the first time.
This is the point that people have stopped listening to this podcast. They're like, "I'll just catch the next one."
Oh, that's so good. Oh, American Public was so good. I'm sorry for making this, for bringing it into me, but I don't even know that you and I have unpacked this at this level before. Like, there's things that I remember being like inspirational to me, and American Public was one of them. And the videos, like, that you were doing things with video that I hadn't seen done in my context. Like, you of course you see like Saturday Night Live or something, and they're always like going to be ahead of the game. But you, in our little church, in our little town, were doing like really funny videos that were like great. And when you did the Fall Out Boy music video and you made Tim every single character, it was like this door of like, wow, you look at all that you can do with video. Like, that's wild.
Yeah, it was fun. And that was, again, the same thing. Tim, but that was because, like, nobody could make a video. Like, the way the format was for the show, there had to be X number of, like, sketches and videos to fit the time. And you couldn't obviously do sketches back to back because you had to turn the stage over. People had to change clothes. And we needed a video. And, like, everybody else that was a part of the American Public, like, had to work. Again, people were working normal jobs except for me and Tim. And we were, like, listening to music driving someplace. And it was when that Fall Out Boy song was super popular, and we said, what if I was like, you know, I know how to make it, like, I know how to split screens in editing, so we can just make you. And Tim was like, well, can we make like a funny video of me lip syncing this? And I was like, what if we made a video where you were everybody, like where all you were all of the band members and the groupie that was trying to like get close to the band, because nobody else could make it. So we just nobody else could do anything. So one day we just went up to the coffee house and spent all day there, Tim changing clothes 4 times.
So good.
And
Tim's dream, like, let's be honest, Tim the front man, he got to be every single.
Got to wear a wig, got to wear like multiple wigs, got to wear a dress at one point. Also part of Tim's dreams, I think. I'm not sure. The American Public, I was only on stage a couple times, but it is honestly the only time I've ever had to wear a dress on stage was because they needed somebody to like host, because they always had a week, you know, every show it was a Saturday Night Live setup where it was and whoever it was that was supposed to host couldn't, and they had already billed it like that it was going to be this person, and it was a woman that was going to do it, a girl was going to do it.
Gotcha.
And they were like, "Ryan, can you just like take all of those parts?" And I was like, "Okay," but they were all like written for girls, so I had to, like, so there were at least 2 different sketches where it was just me in a dress and a wig because there was no girl. There was no other girl that could do it.
Right.
So
in the back of that room, a young Harry Styles watched on and thought,
"Someday,
wait a second,
I could like be on Vogue.
This I like what be. This guy's doing.
I see that.
So we, Ryan and I have known each other a very, very long time. gotten to spend a lot of great time together. Ryan now lives in Nashville.
I do.
And you were telling me a little bit about what you do now, the company that you work for. Can you give a little synopsis of that?
I work for a nonprofit here in Nashville called Salome Health. And we are a nonprofit healthcare provider. So we have two different like clinics that we can see patients at, but we also do a lot of work like in the community. Our primary focus is on, we only serve uninsured individuals. So we will help people navigate the insurance marketplace if they need to understand how to, but our primary focus for people is we serve the immigrant and refugee population of Nashville. Nashville has a really like diverse, group of people. Like one in every seven people in Nashville was born outside of the US. So, a lot of them are coming to Nashville either as refugees or they're immigrating. And so we give them a place to receive medical care. And then we also help them through, like, we have a community health program where we kind of teach them how to like understand the difference between where they came from and how medicine worked over there to how medicine works over here. Like the idea that we have pharmacies you can walk into and ask a question of a pharmacist and they can help you find something. You don't have to see a doctor for it. All those sorts of things. So I work on the development side. So I tell the story to people that want to hear it, and I help people understand how money will affect this. Like how, if they're generous to Salome, how many people we can serve, how many days we can be open.
Gotcha.
So yeah.
Cool. And Ryan is married and has one daughter.
Yes. Elizabeth.
And now you know most of what you need to know, I think, about Ryan. Is there anything else that we need to know about you, Ryan? Is there any shows that you're watching right now? You need everyone to know you're watching this particular show.
I don't feel like it. I'm excited about, this is about to be the week that Disney starts doing the WandaVision.
WandaVision, yes.
Which I know at different points you and I have discussed comic books. It's like one of the things I really liked about having you on as a part of Isaac was that Tim always thought that comics were dumb, and he would be like, I don't care about it. I don't understand it. I don't want to care about it. And then I found Anthony, and Anthony was like, oh yeah, no, like I like comics, and like I want to see every Marvel movie that's ever made, and I want to talk about it. And I was like, yeah, let's bring this kid along so we can
that's it. That's what got
just
me
so
the
I
job.
Can talk about stuff in the car with somebody.
That's what got me the job. Yeah, so we've talked Mandalorian.
If you are still in that boat or not, but I am excited about, because I read that comic like a couple years ago and it's super interesting.
Okay.
And I want to see what they do with it on TV. I have no idea how it translates to TV, so I'm interested to see how they do it.
Yeah. I see, and I'm hesitant with my comic book stuff and my Star Wars stuff because you can like say you're into this and then you meet someone who's into it and you're like, oh, shoot, I'm not into it.
I'm not
your level. I'm not actually into it. So you hate to be like, oh, I like, I mean, I do. Yeah. I really like the stuff. If I'm being totally honest, I mean, the big Marvel movies wore thin on me. Hot take alert. The big Marvel movies wore a little, I was like, by the time we got around to the Ant-Man's, I was like, I just have done this a lot. WandaVision, I'm super interested in, I'm super interested in, and you and I have talked about a lot. Mandalorian. Mandalorian.
Yes.
I loved it. Is it done? Do you know?
I know that's what everybody, nobody knows what the net, like the, you know, at the end of that second season, they talk about like Boba Fett. And so it's like, is Mandalorian's, is the next Mandalorian just all about Boba Fett now? Do we go back?
Yeah.
Like does Baby Yoda get his own series? You know, like how does
Baby Yoda needs his own series. And I want it to be like Alf. Kind of, you know. That's the
it's
Baby
just
Yoda
him
series.
And Luke Skywalker, like, but it's Alf.
Spoiler alert: if you didn't see Mandalorian at this point, though, that's on you.
That's on you.
I think we've cleared it. Yes, that's exactly it. And it's like studio laughter, you know, when Baby Yoda
just antics,
hijinks.
Yeah.
You have two dates to homecoming, Baby
what?
Yoda.
Grogu.
Oh, I love that idea. Okay. So let's talk about Bible stuff, Ryan, because that's what we do here on the Bible is Funny podcast. You alluded to it a little bit. So we're in this college ministry all together about the same time. Ryan was doing comedy with us, super talented, doing comedy, making videos and all these things. But he was also teaching at our Bible study there. It was called 727. Shout out to anybody that remembers 727. It was our area code.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of local pride in Largo, Florida to this day.
That's right.
Still a lot of rappers talking about being from the 727. And so it was a really, really neat thing. Again, I like to, I can only talk best from my perspective. It was like, for me, the way Ryan was teaching the Bible, the way he was pegging other people to come in and teach the Bible, some of the first times I'd heard people really wrestle with the Bible in the way that they were doing it. Definitely things that I can trace back to. Where does the Bible is funny line come from? Like, definitely some stuff in there. Ryan did just was a great teacher. I really enjoyed listening to him. And so I want to talk to you some about this, Ryan. Sometimes we'll unpack here on the podcast like a funny story and why I think that story is funny and what I think sometimes we miss about that story being funny. This one is less about the stories being funny and more about like the way we have taken these stories and then sort of like returned them. There was one particular message that Ryan gave during that time in that college ministry when he was doing that Bible study, where he talked about the story of Noah's Ark. He was up there teaching and just unpacking the fact that most of us, myself very much included, are the bulk of the story, the meat of the story, is a bunch of two animals of each kind on a boat, and it's usually like a coloring sheet. I think you even like used a coloring sheet on screen as like, here's all these animals, like a giraffe poking its head out of this boat, and it's like this very cute thing. And you know, maybe this was your experience when you were growing up in Sunday school or Awanas or something, and you're like, oh, animals, nice. And then you you juxtapose that with the story that all of humanity was destroyed except for like six or seven people. Was it six right. people that were on the boat at the time?
They had three sons. They each had a wife. They're probably a solid like dozen, maybe baker's dozen on there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everyone else dies, probably a watery, drowny death.
Not a quick
that's,
one.
That's the story. And you even had a work of art, a painting of like people climbing to the highest point of a mountain to like cling to life. And I remember thinking then, like, yes, like these stories are, there's a lot going on in these stories. And,
yeah.
and sometimes you get this one prism of it. So what I wanted to ask you about is, you know, that story's really stuck with me, the way you presented it and the way you juxtaposed it. I'm sure you had a really good point at the end of that message that I do not remember.
I'm pretty sure the point was like, you got to be careful or else it's going to rain too hard here one day and then God's going to get you. That's usually how I ended all the sermons. God's going to get you.
Being in Florida, that was a great scare tactic.
Right, right.
Because we were dealing with rain,
man.
We were dealing with rain a lot. I wanted to ask you now, because now you have a daughter, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. beautiful daughter, and you are, how old is she now?
She will be four in March, so she's almost four, yeah.
She's almost four. I have Crosby, who is five. And I don't know about Elizabeth, and I'll let you unpack some of that maybe. But I know Crosby's like he's learning some of these stories. He's going to church. He goes to a Christian school. And he's learning some of these stories. He's coming back and, like he's asking a lot of questions and he's like unpacking the stories maybe differently than we did. So just in light of hearing you say that before, now you have Elizabeth, how are you broaching these stories with your daughter as you approach that?
Yeah, I don't know. So we've discussed this, like Natalie and I have discussed this a lot. So, yeah, like I was, you know, my parents were both Christians. Like I was raised, you know, like going to church and in a Sunday school, and the church was like pretty conservative, you know, like
yeah.
pretty old school. And so like I grew up around, I went to a Christian private school and like all this stuff. And so that stuff was always a part of my life. But also when I hit my like teenage year, not even teenage, mostly like in my early 20s, all of a sudden was like what you said, wait, the rest of the people didn't make it on the ark. Like,
right.
what does that say? Like, what
right.
does that mean? And so like, I had to kind of unpack what I had been told. I had to figure out the lenses through which I should look at these things. And so now we've been having these conversations about, as we raise a person, like, do we like, how much do we influence what she understands about God? Because, like, it did end up kind of causing us to take a break from trying to understand God and going, like, I need to take a break from this. I need to figure out how I feel about all this, because there's a lot going on that nobody really briefed me on when I was four, like, you know, talking about going forward. So, so, you know, like, we have friends, like, that will, you know, be reading. They have all the kids' Bible stuff and the, you know, from the earliest age, they're reading, and we're like, yeah, we didn't. Yeah. You know, like, she's like, it's not like we don't pray, and it's not like we don't talk about God. Like, she knows about, you know, Christmas, and like, what this past Christmas was like the most I think she's been able to comprehend. Like, there's something else that happens besides Santa Claus.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff. So whatever. But so the most helpful thing, and this is, the most helpful thing that I've heard, I honestly do not remember where I heard it, but I will not take credit for inventing the language of it, was somebody said that, like, perhaps our duty as parents, like God-fearing or like Christ-following parents, I think, like people that endeavor to be in the way of Jesus.
Right.
Like, to follow Jesus like that. Like, maybe our duty is to tell our kids Bible stories in their fullness, the same way that people will hang really expensive works of art on the hallway outside of a kid's bedroom, that the kid will walk past every day of their life and see it as pretty colors, and then only later go like, oh wow, that was like a really nice piece of art. Like, there's a lot going on in this. Like, there's a lot to unpack, but to never dumb it down. Like, we still hang that artwork outside of our kid's room.
Right.
We don't only decorate it with coloring sheets, you know, like we do decorate it. We introduce them to depth and beauty and complexity and all of these things, because at some point they're going to learn that. And I would rather she learn it from me, even in weird ways at the age of four, than, you know, try and figure it out on her own 20 years from now or whatever.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making enough sense out of that. But yeah, that's kind of how. You know, we have not talked about Noah's Ark yet, or at least I don't think they have at school. She does go. The preschool that she goes to is a part of, is in like the basement of a church. It's one of those old school, you know, like just a bunch of older ladies that take care of little babies in preschool. So I'm sure they're talking about, you know, different Bible stories. But so far, she has not come home asking me about like the fate of humanity if God decides to, you know, flood the world or something. She hasn't dealt with the existential crisis yet.
It's so true, because in all of these stories, you do see, because they'll stop them at a certain point. As I was talking about having this conversation with you, I was talking to Rachel about, you get a story like David and Goliath, and like, I want Crosby to know that story. It's not even that, that's a story that has transcended Christianity. It's a David and Goliath story. We know it's a seemingly smaller, inferior person, you know, believing in themselves and going the extra mile and defeating insurmountable odds. It's a cool, good story. And then there's a point where like, and you tell it and you get like, you get your coloring sheet version. And then you hit a point where like, oh yeah, then he climbed on top of him and he took a sword and he chopped his head off.
There are no coloring sheets of David standing on top of a headless Goliath, like holding this head above him. Because I know of, I do not see any kids coloring sheets like that. Yeah.
It's less like Davidson in the NCAA tournament. And it's more like, oh wow. Is he kind of a monster? Cause that's like that seems like a nasty thing to do to somebody.
Yeah. Like even like there was no, like it, in the beginning of the David and Goliath story, Saul's not like, all right, anyone that can kill him and cut his head off. He's just like, if someone can defeat him, I didn't even say kill. If they can defeat him, David's like, I'll do you one better. Like, you have that guy's head? No, I don't want his head, David. Don't bring it back here. It smells. I don't want it. Don't bring it to camp. No, that's coming, man.
It is a funny visual, too, of like, because you get that, I think the, I'm paraphrasing now because I don't have it pulled up, but it's everybody like rushing because it's like, oh, he's defeated. Now we rush against the Philistines. And you have to wonder if they're going by like, hey, David, no, this is fine. This one's taken care of.
He's dead, man.
We're going.
What are you doing? Oh, my gosh.
We're going on.
David.
But you get holy that. Cow. You get behind even Noah's Ark. Like you get Noah. Yeah. Okay, Noah's Ark. Great, lovely. And then the people dying is one piece. Then you get okay, everything settles down. Noah passes out naked and is discovered by his kids. Yeah. So you just Noah, look.
The first thing Noah does, which I don't know if I blame him. Like if I was on a boat with my family for 40 days and a bunch of animals, the first thing Noah does when he gets off is have a drink. And so he like that's the, you know,
I told
so
you, like, Mom, this is what I was dealing with the whole tour, Mom.
But yeah, like nobody tells the rest of the story, which is, you know, like, right. Hey, there's a whole lot of stuff that happens, or even the beginning of the story, which like, read the opening passage of Noah, like in Genesis, where God says, like God looks at the earth and he goes, the wickedness of man has grown to a point that I can't tolerate it anymore. I'm going to restart the whole thing. Just the right. Whole thing. You're like, holy cow, God, that is deep.
Right.
Man, that is wow. Heavy. That's heavy stuff. The only feasible way for me to fix this is if I just hit the reset button on my project of humanity. You're right. Like, that doesn't give me a lot of confidence in how this is going for us right now, like in 2021.
No kidding. And it's something that like you were talking about that season for you, where you're like, okay, you have the, it's taught to you. And then you have the, like, you're really starting to read it for yourself. I didn't mention this earlier, but you actually got like advanced degrees in like biblical studies, yeah, as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I have a Master of Arts and a Master of Divinity.
Yeah, so you're pursuing this thing, and that part, like I feel it. I've lived through it. You're going through. You're starting to unpack it for yourself, and it's like even coming across things where I'm like, yeah, I don't really know what to do with this passage or this text, and I'm open to hearing what some other people think. But then it's like this whole different ball game when it's like, oh, but then my 5-year-old
right
is asking like very fundamental, even like really just honest question. Like, I'll tell you this, like he was saying at one point, in the Noah story specifically, he was just, again, just told the story as it, everybody died, all the animals on the boat, Noah and his family. And I think his exact way of wording it was, is God the good guy in that story?
Right. Great question, Crosby. Great question.
And you're like, yes. And now I need to like, get you there. So I love what you're saying, because you're saying put the whole thing up early and allow it to reveal itself more over time.
Yeah. You don't need to get into the ramifications of all of it with your 5-year-old, but you also need to address, I think, to him, like, yeah, that's really complicated, man. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like we need to teach. I think because one of the things that was really hard for me was like that got frustrating for me that I, you know, have had to work through or whatever was that, you know, like for me 30 years ago or whatever, even more than that now, like being taught these stories when I'm, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, like I'm being taught them as almost as if they are like, as if that portion of like sacred text was written so that it would be taught to me later. And it's
right.
Yeah. Maybe that's, instead of like not telling our kids the stories, maybe the better thing is to tell our kids, like, this is why these stories were written, as opposed to like, God wrote a storybook for you. And it's like, well, is that really how that gets really confusing later on in life.
Right.
So
right.
It's more like, hey, there are stories about God and about what God has done throughout history, and we can read them and understand God better. But like, God didn't, like the flood didn't happen so that you would have a coloring sheet, you know, like that's not quite how it all works. Like,
but Noah getting drunk and passing out naked, that did happen so you could get a color.
Right. Which is, I want to introduce you to this new coloring sheet that I've, somebody somewhere has surely, like, it probably takes a 2-second Google to find someone has made coloring sheets that are like inappropriate for like Bible story coloring sheets that are probably not for Sunday school, like David on top of Goliath holding the head. Or,
you know, I see stuff like that, or I think stuff like that, and I'm like, that, I would see that, and I would think, oh, that's funny. I would put most of Spencer's gifts in this category. I don't want it. I don't want anyone to buy it, but I see it, and I think, that's funny. That's a funny idea.
Yeah.
It's, dude, it is really, it has been a whole different thing. And Crosby, too, personality-wise, he is like a processor. Like, because I know, I even see Finn, my younger one, like, stuff goes in one ear and out the other for him. He's watching the show on Netflix right now about, like, it's like this Jurassic Park thing. He was all into dinosaurs. And I'm like, oh, it's on Netflix. It says it's for kids, Jurassic Park. These like dinosaurs are eating people on this, which is okay, listener. I know you're like, Anthony, have you never heard of Jurassic Park? Do you not know what happened to Jurassic Park? I was thinking, because it was for kids, this wouldn't happen. Now, this sent Crosby into a tailspin. Like, Crosby was, we watched Dolphin Tale 2. If you guys, thought
I was, have to have seen the first one to appreciate the second one.
It's a lot of origin stories that you will be out of the loop on.
All right, I'll just start
if
over.
You don't watch, and I hope if you thought I was cool that this podcast alone has talked you out of it. I am watching Dolphin Tale 2, which happened right around the corner in Clearwater, Florida. Shout out, like the marina is.
This podcast brought to you by Clearwater Aquarium,
Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Yeah. And so we're going through or whatever, and spoiler, if you haven't seen Dolphin Tale 2, one of the dolphins dies early, very early, and it's at the bottom of the pool. I did not know. I didn't seen the movie yet.
Wow.
So then we're watching the movie. It goes on the thing, and there's a dolphin at the bottom of the thing, and Crosby is like, oh, wow, what happened to that dolphin? And I'm like, not unlike the conversation we're having now, I'm like, you know what, man? Like, that dolphin died. That's what happened. Death is something that happened. He's like, okay. So dolphins die. I'm like, yeah, that's what happens. It's kind of the circle of life. And we did the song from Lion King and all that. And then, he's like, oh, okay. Do people die? And I was like, dang it. Dolphin Tale 2.
Yeah.
This is not how I wanted this to go. And that's just him. Like, he's gonna go, and then he's like a gut punch with this stuff. Cause he's like, oh, do people die? Okay. Are you going to die? And now I'm crying and we're, I'll always be in your heart. And this is how this is like all goes. Finn is like dinosaur chomps person in the story. And he's just eating popcorn.
Laughing at it.
He feels nothing.
Yeah.
I like, it happened the first time that dinosaur show was on. And I was like, oh man. Like, cause I'm just like programmed for project. And Finn was just like, all right, can we do the next episode of Dinosaur Show?
Keep it going. Let's roll. Let's just keep it going.
So anyway, yeah, this is where I'm at. My 5-year-old is really pushing us into these areas. But I love that thought. I love the thought of, because I think that that's probably the thing to be avoided most, is the feeling that this thing you've sort of been building on or around is incomplete, or that there was something intentionally hidden from you about the thing.
I think that's, so I think, like, you know, I worked at a church for a while. I spent time studying for these degrees and working with people in those fields. Like, a lot of my life, like a lot of my adult life has been spent around people who are either trying to figure out Jesus or the Bible or whatever. And a lot of, I think, of like the pain and frustration is usually, if you really, really peel back all the layers, is usually less directed at God and more directed at the fact that at some point somebody didn't explain everything to you. Like, so, you know, when your kid asks, like, is God the good guy in this? And you're like, well, that's a really complicated question. Mm. Like, it makes way more, like, it's, I think, I don't know. This is all a long-term experiment because, like, they're 4 and 5 years old right now. But I feel like having those conversations that say, like, yes, God is always good. It's an inherent part of God's character. Mm-hmm. Like, we understand goodness because of who God is and because we all bear that image of God. And so that's how we understand what goodness is. But, like, there are hard – like, it's a hard thing to fully understand. And, like, instead of going, like, well, yeah, God's always a good guy, move on. You know, like, and Noah's the hero because, you know, like – Noah was righteous and everybody else was terrible. Like, I don't know. Were they terrible, terrible? Or were they, like, not righteous? Those are two different categories, right? Mm. Like, so it gets tricky. Like, we're not going to have these existential dilemmas with our 5-year-olds, but, like, to even engage in that conversation throughout their childhood.
Right.
You know, like at some point they're going to ask, like, why did Jesus have to die? Like, do we believe that Jesus died and then like rose again? Like, well, why did Jesus die? And so then we have to talk about like, well, because people don't like Jesus. Like, there are people that didn't like what Jesus said.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, and there's a whole understanding of this that we have to get into. So yeah, I think that like, in my experience, somewhat professionally, it has always revolved around people wrestling with that stuff has really revolved more around like, I'm more upset that nobody told me this. And right. Now I have to figure it out when at some points, like I was dealing with men and women who were like 50 and 60 years old that had grown up in churches and just assumed that like the Bible was written just for them and everything made sense if you looked at it that way and that was it. Mm-hmm. And then like when it starts to peel off, they're like, I can't believe the church lied to me. I was like, well, yeah, but don't leave the church altogether. Like right. Find the church that's willing to let you wrestle with this and maybe wrestle with you in some of this without abandoning all of it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Cause it's so good in there. And I get the, and I'm glad you brought up some of that too, because being in the seat I'm in now, I almost feel more for like, I understand the desire of, I want to give something solid and easy to understand to Crosby. Yeah. I do. I want this to be I wish it was the easiest thing to understand. And of course I will give those parts the strongest and the earliest. So I understand that. I understand that tension that you're like, I just want them to have these solid foundations to build off of. But I think what you're saying is exactly right. And I think it's I think where I've seen hiccups and things and where like a heartbeat for this project really is when you are like skirting sections or where you're like short arming sections is usually to make some sort of structure fit more neatly, some sort of thought structure or thing or something like that.
Yep.
And I sincerely mean this, not just because you're on the podcast, but you teaching at 727 was one of those first times I saw somebody poking at like, okay, but it actually doesn't say that. Like, I understand that that has built a better structure and that has built a better system, but the Bible actually doesn't say that. And so, yeah, I think that that's a great practice to start with your kids early on. And the stuff you just said too, I love that. Like God is good. That is like an inherent thing. And we're going to start our conversations about this from there. But it's okay to question that too. And I think people are obviously tenuous in those spaces. And as a parent, again, I saw a great meme the other day that was about the Little Mermaid. And it was like when you're young watching Little Mermaid, you're like, man, King Triton never lets her do anything. And now you're like, listen, you're 16 years old. Put a shirt on. Stay down in the water. Please let me just help you here. Like you're siding more with the parents.
What have I built for you? A kingdom. And now you're going to – all I asked for was for you to sing because you have like the most beautiful voice ever. Why would you not want to do that?
Literally sold your soul to
– Right. Anyway. To an octopus. Why on earth –
Thank you, Disney, helping us understand the world.
I will say, one of the things that you talked, like, and one of the things you alluded to is something it made me think of, like, one of the easiest ways to explain it, I feel like something that one of my professors at one point said was, like, that, you know, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this before on the podcast, and so people have probably heard this, that, like, so much of if we really choose to follow Jesus, if we choose to believe that Jesus is who he says he is and everything that means, is that we are entering a life of just full tension all the time. Like it is hard. Like there is like everything seems to be held in tension because there's stuff that doesn't make sense. Even Jesus himself, like fully God, fully man, doesn't make sense. Like, so how does that work? And one of the things that professors say, like any, like the greatest heresies, like the best heresies that people have come up with for thousands of years are things that eliminate tension. So we should always be wary of an easy answer that eliminates the tension of like, you know, well, but is God the good guy? Like, well, yes, but it's not always that simple as opposed to like, well, yeah. And all those people totally deserve to die. Like, you know, that eliminates that makes it all easy. And you're like, okay, except for it doesn't make it easy because now you've just taught this 5-year-old that there is this binary like judgment of good and bad, and everything is cut and dry all the time. So yeah, it's avoiding the temptation to create or to make everything easy and palatable. And yeah, that's what I don't want to do. I don't, you know, like, I mean, I want to a degree, like, obviously I'm not going to, I want my kid to have fun and I want my kid to explore.
Yes. Oh gosh. Dude, you know? there's a line here. Like I've had conversations with people where they're like, along this line, though, yeah, I was like explaining to my kid how like what's going on in the world with child trafficking, and I was like, oh, dude,
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I'm not there. I'm not having that conversation. But I love that last thought there, man. That's so good to say. And I think it's like embrace the areas of that tension with your kids. Like I think that's such a great practice to say. Like I know Mal and Tim. I've talked to Mal about this some, and she says she's not shy to say like, what do you think? Like, what do you think to Olive? And let her engage with you.
Yeah.
So I think that that's honestly, as I brought you on here for a free counseling session for me, I'm starting to unpack, like, it's about resisting that inherent, maybe paternal urge to say, I have it all figured out and I now have to pass it on to you. And if I don't have it all figured out, I'm not a good parent because I'm not passing on all my completed knowledge to you. And I think when you're approaching your faith with humility and with space to learn and grow, I think that's what you're teaching your kids. And that's maybe a little bit of the fallout we're feeling right now, is that there was a generation of kids raised with like a pretty rigid, there is no room here. We're giving you the, what all of these stories mean, and they can't mean anything else. And it's caused some people to walk away.
I remember talking about like traveling for improv and stuff. There was a time when it was just Tim and I traveling someplace, and I don't remember like the full context other than he had just started, I think, to like, because he and I kind of went through some of that same like, I'm just going to pause on this because I don't really want to deal with what the fallout is here. So I'm going to stop thinking through all this and just kind of take a step back and engage a lot of it. And he was stepping back into it a little bit more. And he was just starting to kind of have those conversations of like, is it? Would it be possible that God did not create the world in six literal 24-hour periods of time? Like, would that actually be a thing? And what does that mean if I say that it is possible? Like, what if you pull that string, how much just unravels in my life? But that's it. Like, do we say to our kids, like, this is the only way that this can be read? Like, this is the only way that this part of the Bible can be read.
Right.
Or do we say, like, here is how some people believe this, and here is how some other people believe this, and as you get older, you can think about this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Ken Ham, big listener of the podcast. This is what I was dealing with on tour the whole time, Ken. Now
sorry,
you know.
You can include my email address in the description. People can log all complaints against full heresy with me.
Yeah.
Just spitting hot takes.
It's so funny that you say that too. And let me say clearly, like I have not done a lot of research in this particular area, but my sister happens to be she has her master's or doctorate in microbiology. She's an insane, quick, funny story about her. She was writing a paper and I was like, I can't help you with anything, but I know how to write. So you could send me your paper and I could help you with
that.
And I was like, I feel like that would be a cool thing to do. She was like, okay, cool. She sent it to me. And like 30 seconds later, I was like, oh yeah, I can't help you. I don't know.
Is there
any
a
of
service
this
on campus that can help you with this? Cause I don't even know these words. They're all showing up red in spell check. Cause I don't think they exist.
I can't tell you what part of speech they are. I literally can't even help you at all with this.
Yeah.
And I remember her saying, growing up in a Christian family, she's still a Christian, but coming out and saying, like, it's funny that, like, the world of science is not, like, nearly as interested in this conversation. She's like, I grew up in this little bubble where it's, like, really, when we talked about science, it's one of the few things we talked about. And then she got into pursuing her field and everything and was like, oh, yeah, it's just not. I mean, there's people that are obviously curious, but it's sort of an unprovable, you're not going to be able to definitively go back and say, this is how the start of the world happens.
Yeah. Is it more important for us to teach our kids that this is how God created everything? Or is it more important for us to understand that like God has created everything?
Mm.
Like, and I think for a lot of us are probably in the age group that you and I fall into we got taught this is how God created everything.
Right.
And if you didn't believe that, then you couldn't believe everything else. And what I would hope that I might be able to teach Elizabeth is like that God did create. God is a creator, and all creativity comes from this character that has, you know, this character of God that we all bear. I think that's, you know,
yeah,
what I would rather she learn.
And this is the magic of Charles Ryan Kendrick, is that you have all these great insights and the comedic genius to come up with hurrahs.
Hurrahs!
Oh man, this has been so great, Ryan. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm sure we will have you back another time.
Anytime. You know who to call, which is me.
In the interest of full disclosure, I think we've created a safe, open space. I'm still not 100% sure what a pomegranate is or how I would ever go about eating it.
It's okay, man. Nobody's perfect. Let's get that in there, since this is a Bible podcast.
Fruit that the idea is you just don't bite into it is just a hurdle. I look at it in the grocery store and I'm like, just give me to the apple. I get the apple.
Natalie loves pomegranates, but part of the love of them is the deconstruction of them, which makes no sense to me. Because like, you know, you can just buy seeds. Like you can spend a little bit more money and just get an entire thing of already harvested pomegranate seeds to eat. And I'm like, do you want these? She's like, no, I like the, like, you cut it open, you like, you work at it, you get all the seeds out. I'm like, no, it seems terrible. I'll buy you the whole ones, and then I'll buy the seeds to eat.
Although I will say, with crab legs, I sort of get some of that, because it's like, it's fun to get in there and fight. You're like a little pirate looking for treasure, and then you get it, and you're like, look at me. Look at all the work I did. I think that's what it is. It makes me
0.4 ounces of food.
It makes me feel like I did something for the dinner I'm about to eat. I'm not a hunter anymore. I've lost touch with when I eat crab legs or something like that. Although I'm very hypocritical here, because like I said, with fruit, it's like I just don't want to. Rachel's on me all the time. I don't even want to wash it. I just want to eat.
Natalie has asked me that. Like, I'll be serving fruit to Elizabeth. She'll be like, did you wash that? I'm like, I honestly don't remember. Sorry.
It's just the quicker we get to eating, the better for me.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much again.
Thank you for having me.
This was fun. Everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. Please subscribe. Leave a review. That is the most helpful thing you can do if you're a listener of the podcast and you wake up in the middle of the night and you think, boy, I just wish I could help Anthony with the Bible podcast. Leave a review. That's the most helpful thing. So
even if it's a negative one about me,
but
they can leave it like this episode
specifically for Ken Ham. Leave that and just specify you're talking about Augustus, because I want everyone to know exactly who you're talking about.
Right.
That's right. So leave a review, not a negative one about Ryan. Leave a review. If you're not already, follow along on Instagram at The Bible Is Funny. That's also a great way to message me, chat with me. I'm there. I'm ready to chat. I'd love to talk with you guys. And we'll be back again here very soon with another episode of the podcast, and we'll talk to you then.